is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
It's time for Enlightenment in the City with Eli Hoshotara on the News for the Soul Network. Eli is a spiritual coach and intuitive reader with a unique flair. Strong yet soft, compassionate with a heart, she lives the consciousness of being feminine with strength. Eli tells it like it is. Welcome Eli Hoshotara back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host for this hour, Elmaya Hoshamtara. You can find me here at newsforthesoul.com. You can send your letters into on the air at tellus.net. That's tell us, just one letter, or with just one L. But it's on the air at tellus.net. You can also go to our website and find our phone number, which is 1-646-595-4274, and you can call in. So one is the cross-country, so to make it a little bit easier, maybe 646-595-4274, and you can call into the show. So let's talk a little bit about all this stuff that people keep going on about, you know, this is causing problems, that's causing problems, in terms of past traumas, in terms of, you know, somebody's been given mental health diagnoses, for example, medications, because sometimes I get people coming in and it's like, you know, and I'm happy to be here for people, but I really want to be clear that, you know, I'm a coach. The coaching deals with and helps you work through problems to help you build skill set. It does not process trauma. It's not a substitute for certain therapeutic processes. I'm not going to say it's a substitute for therapy because I can't say that. So what it basically does is, like, because, for example, we don't process trauma. So while some things may look similar and some things may use the same processes, it's because we're helping you build resiliency. We're helping you build a skill set that you need to be able to and willing to be able to do the work. So And obviously, I far from, you know, give people medications and stuff like that. So I really want to make clear, because this has come up, you know, sometimes people, they get nervous about going to see a therapist because they're scared of a mental health diagnosis. They're scared of a medication, for example. So while there may be some places where this is otherwise, medication in a lot of places is used to help somebody who's otherwise having a hard time coping be able to help calm some of their symptoms down so that they'll be able to do the work, okay? And that's really important to understand. Some people also have a different take on it, which is they only believe in putting people on medication for 3 months, 6 months, or a year. So it's not always going to be on the rest of your life thing. It's also important to understand that some people are more responsible with it than others. So, for example, if you're on things like lithium orotate, which some people are choosing because it's a supplement. I can't say it's going to completely and absolutely 100%, you know, be a substitute for lithium, the psychiatric drug. But there are a lot of things where they're more responsible with it, and they're checking your blood. They're doing your blood work. As one example, they're also looking at whether it's appropriate to keep you on. Now, if you're not getting that level of care and you don't want to be on medication, and some people respect that, right? Again, it does depend on what you're looking for, but for some people, they do understand that it's not that the medication is the end goal, it's that you're doing the work that is the end goal. And some people understand that more than others. If you don't want to be on medication and, you know, somebody's like not really willing to work with you unless you're on medication, but it's not something that actually you have to be on medication for, then look for a different therapist, quite frankly, and have a conversation with somebody who's more responsible with it, who understands that the end goal is not to keep you, you know, on medication that you don't need for the rest of your life when it's meant to just calm symptoms. So there's a lot more knowledge about that out there than sometimes people think. And that's really important to understand, because there are certain things, for example, I don't work with nervous system issues. And so while people can calm down even with a nervous system issue by doing coaching, they can definitely make a lot of headway. And if you prefer to work with me, then that's great. But there does come a time where, again, you have to be it has to be somebody who's willing to do their work, number one, and capable of doing it. And so there are certain things that, you know, need to be processed differently or may not, and that's either through a therapist or it's going to be through something that deals with physical traumas, such as your visceral manipulation, your neural manipulations as examples. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff that can happen, side effects that come up where people have either had improvement. I can't completely 100% say they've had absolutely, they've been cured, because curing indicates that there's been a complete reversal, right? Like it's completely gone away. But there's also a lot of different underlying factors that a lot of people don't understand and they don't want to understand. So when, for example, I've met a lot of therapists that quite frankly should not be therapists. And there's some really good ones out there too who are more, have more common sense, right? They're not sticking you on drugs as a side effect of their own, of them not having worked through their own stuff. Because some people, you know, get into that because they're going to, you know, fix people, but they don't actually have enough understanding of what the human being is actually capable of doing, or they don't have the skill set in self-development and coaching that we have, which is really important to understand that when you're looking for somebody who you're going to be able to work with, it's that somebody is going to be able to work with those facets. So the benefit of coming to a coach is that we're very self-development based, or at least I am. So I've done a lot of training, I've done a lot of studying, those sorts of things, and that gets you ways to naturally help build your skill set, but also to make breakthroughs so that you can release different issues that you're having, and that can dramatically change your life. And that's without, again, provided that somebody is currently capable of actually doing those things, that can make a really good difference within them and really remarkably change their life, even if some of the other things are not yet fixed, or in cases of like maybe there is something where people actually need medication for it, or they need different processing in terms of dealing with the nervous system, because if people deal with the nervous system, that's when you get people who, you know, it's like, okay, have peace in your heart, and they're trying really hard, and they're focusing on the positive, and then they do it, and then it's like, oh, fuck this. And that can actually happen when there's trauma held in the body. Now, if you have somebody who does not have that issue, and then you're working with them in terms of, hey, guess what? This is the process that we're going to do on you. Look at, so if we're going to go into here, we're going to look at what some of the good points are. It's because with a good coach, or an excellent coach, me, we're actually looking at the positives because there's actually positives in there. Not forcing yourself to see the positive where, you know, you're getting beaten in the head 3 times a week. Well, hey, at least you got somebody. No. Okay, so this is not about forcing you into something that's not there. It's just that, especially when people have been stuck for a long time, what is there is going to be a lot more profound than people are able to see and understand, and that's part of what keeps people stuck. Number one. Number two, it tends to make their life a lot harder. So people get in negative behavioral patterns and they get stuck and they do those things on repeat, and it takes time for those to turn over. You know, so it is about having constant practice until you actually get there. And I want to be clear, that is very, very real. But sometimes people look like it's kind of fake because they're doing it from a fake place and it's not actually real. And then you start to get things that are really skewed off of, you know, off of reality. So it doesn't mean that, so sometimes there will still be a point where something may look fake just because somebody doesn't think that they're capable of doing it. But somebody thinking it's fake because they're not capable of doing it yet is very different than not actually having the capability. And that's really important to make that distinction. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, different reasons. Personally, I prefer self-development just because of the amounts of breakthroughs that I've had, just because of what I've managed to do and the changes that I've managed to make in my life in terms of growth. And it's been fascinating. And I've been through more than one time where it's like, oh, I didn't know life could be this good. And then it's like, oh, the next level, oh, I didn't know life could be this good. And then it's like, oh, that's what they're talking about. Oh, that does make sense. And then, you know, the next part gets put to rest. So there's a lot of growth that can actually happen. And ideally, whether you're choosing a coach or if somebody does need a therapist, you're ideally choosing somebody who actually understands what is possible and capable and what you are going to be able to do. So sometimes, you know, people are like, well, I can't really do it. Not understanding that, again, is different than having a lack of capability. There can also be some things in terms of how trauma is still affecting the person that can interfere with that process. And again, nervous system issues. People have, if you suspect you have nervous system issues, it is much easier to live life without having nervous system issues or having being stuck in long-term, you know, dysregulation, if that's how it works. You know, a lot of dysregulation for a very long time. It is infinitely easier to live outside of that than it is to live in that, just to be clear. While some people may always, you know, some people think may be more sensitive all the time or for longer term, anything that somebody's going to be able to make a difference in terms of their nervous system issues is going to have an impact. That being said, you also have to be willing to work on the self-development stuff. When people don't, that's when you get put back in the exact same patterns that you just left. And unfortunately, I just seen recently that somebody's trying to come back with, you don't have to look at your stuff, you know. I understand that I'm not interested anymore in your factual, the facts of what happened. If you have pain, you know, I honor that. Gotta be really careful with that stuff, because here's the thing. The thing that gets you out of pain is facing yourself, and it's just like, hey, if I do this instead, and part of the healing process is understanding that if you do healthy serving behaviors and you see them work and they start to actually get beneficial, healthy results for you, that is part of the healing process. But you don't get that if you're lying your butt off, right? You don't get that if you're not doing your share of the work, if you're twisting things around. And here's the thing. People who don't want to look at their own participation in it, again, that number one would be more of a therapeutic client. And I get people who are like, you don't know, it's really not my fault. And it's like, oh boy, that person's going to be stuck for a long time. And they're going to be stuck and in more pain for a lot longer than they need to. Practitioner understands full well that they're responsible for their life, which is how they've managed to pull themselves out of unserving situations, toxic relationships, abusive relationships, toxic upbringings, and how they've managed to get healing is because they've understood that they're responsible for their life and what changes do they need to implement. On the flip side, people who suffer a lot tend to blame other people all the time. And is there a direct correlation between that? Oh, you betcha. So people who suffer a lot, you know, they're not being honest about it, they're twisting things around. Well, what happens when you twist things around? You get mad at other people over things that they're not actually doing. And then people get very reactive about that, and then they get very punishing. And some people say, well, and this is codependency, L, I've been hurt a lot. I've been hurt a lot, so I deserve to hurt other people. They deserve it. Okay. So why have you been hurt a lot? Usually because you've been on the receiving end of somebody who thinks that you deserve it, who thinks that they've been hurt a lot, so they should be able to get some of those, take out some of those exact same behaviors on you. People in codependency, when there's a lot of it, often don't correlate the fact that when they're getting hurt, that other people that are hurting them are often using the exact same behaviors that they are. People don't make those correlations. And even when they do, if they're in codependency with that, it becomes, well, people do this to me. It hurts. I should be able to do it to other people because everybody does it. Does everybody do it? No. Do people in codependency do behaviors that hurt people? Oh, yeah, absolutely. In interdependency, because interdependency does not mean perfect. It just means, generally speaking, that you're on more of a serving, what we call healthy and responsible side of the spectrum, but you're also taking it a lot of steps further. Interdependency overall also indicates that you are coming into life more as a whole person in terms of how you're interacting with other people. When they see something that they've done that they recognize in another person, so let's say, you know, Red has done something to me. If it was something that I have done or done in the past that I've changed, and now I'm on the receiving end of that behavior and I recognize that, I go, oh, huh, that does hurt. Okay, and that's why you stop it. In interdependency, that's why you stop it. Or, huh, that explains why, you know, so-and-so stopped talking to me. Oh, because I did something, and that does hurt. Okay. So that explains why. So I stopped feeling victimized by Sally having walked off, for example, because she stopped talking to me because I said something the wrong way. And sometimes it's very, very subtle why you'll have the things that you say may cause you problems. And sometimes it's not really subtle. It's a big, huge, whopping mistake. Whoops. But it'll feel subtle for the level because people are very used to it. So in codependency, the mistakes that really hurt you, people often act like they're not a big deal. Why? Because they're not considered a big deal in codependency. So if somebody runs over your cats and that's, you know, they're on the way to your house and they run over all your cats or all your dogs, I'm more of a dog person personally, but, you know, you do you, boo. But if they're coming, driving to your house and they're knocking off all the neighborhood pets, for some people who are very used to large expressions of a lot of aggression, a lot of anger, that's not a big deal and that's not a warning sign. So if they happen to run over your cat, you should understand it's not that big of a deal. Now, if you love your pet or you don't want to pay $300 more because they just ran over your child's bike or $50, however much you paid for the kid's bike, you have a right to want to have your property protected. In codependency, because people often don't know how to behave and because they lash out because of the pain and suffering, it tends to be common, quote-unquote, codependent courtesy that you're not allowed to get upset when these things happen to you. You should understand. And it happens because it's common courtesy because people don't know how to react. It's common courtesy because somewhere people start to understand, yeah, I get why you're very upset and why you're very reacting. The problem with it in codependency is that the expectation goes so overboard that you should be okay with things and that the other person shouldn't be responsible for their actions, that you end up consistently getting on the receiving end of a bunch of behavioral problems that are causing you a lot of pain and suffering and they're causing you a lot of problems in your life. In codependency, people often have a hard time in life because it feels like they can't get anywhere. It feels like no matter what they do, it doesn't create a beneficial result. Now, do positive actions create a beneficial result? Yes, but you have to be at a certain level with it, and you have to be at a certain level with enough in enough different areas. It's also important to remember that in codependency, when people are lacking a skill set, it is very common to make it bad or wrong to have the skill set. Very, very common. In codependency, because there's so much skill set missing, they start to make a lot of the things wrong that they need. And they do that sometimes because they don't have the skill set, so they're backing up their own negative behaviors so that you don't leave them by seeing through the fact that they've done something really wrong. But it also happens because people honestly think that's what it's a good thing to be doing. In codependency, value systems are often based on you're a good person if you take pain and suffering. And so when you're on the receiving end of that, even if you do it and recognize you do those own behaviors yourself, when you're on the receiving end of that, because you're only one person, it's always going to feel like you're outnumbered and it's always going to be a lot more people than you who are doing all these bad things for you. Additionally, when people are threatened by certain behaviors, like if you eat very healthy, some people really have a hard time with that. Even if they eat healthy themselves, but they haven't quite embraced how healthy they actually do eat, or they don't quite understand yet what would be a realistic version of eating healthy, if they're not comfortable with it and they're talking to somebody else, they may be fearful about hanging out with other people who eat very healthy because, or they feel like they have to justify anytime they do have a treat and feel really bad and negative that they're having a treat because they think that, you know, somebody else is having a higher standard. It means that they don't eat healthy, and that's actually not true. Just because somebody always eats salad whenever you're around does not mean that they don't have cookies behind the scenes. And I met people like that where, I mean, they make the most amazing salads. And, I mean, taking the time to cut the pomegranate in half and, you know, knocking those pomegranate aerials out onto the salad, you know, taking the nuts, toasting them in a pan, you know, seasoning with spices. I mean, like everything you can do to really, you know, bling up that salad, people are doing, and it's absolutely beautiful. And if you don't understand the fact that they're going home and having cookies, then it can become very easy to be intimidated by the fact that somebody made such a beautiful salad. Now, do they eat like that all the time? Some people do. And it's a lot easier to eat healthier if you do it. Why? Because those salads are freaking amazing. And it's a lot harder to eat healthy if, you know, you're eating lettuce and tomato every single night for a year. that's a lot harder to do because you're not getting the range of nutrients. And the range of nutrients is one of the factors that helps you to be able to eat healthy foods. So when people are like, you don't need nuts on this, you don't need this, you don't need that, just stuff it down and you're having a hard time doing it, it's because putting in the nuts and putting in the dried fruit or putting in the fresh pomegranate seeds, you know, whatever it is for you, doing those things changes the nutrients that you're getting in. And when you have the variety of nutrients, it's a lot easier to continue to eat healthy foods. And that's one of the reasons why some people can do it easier. So just because you struggle with eating lettuce every single day does not mean you're not a healthy eater, and it far from makes you a bad person. It just means that your body's screaming out that you need something else besides lettuce in terms of your fruit and vegetable intake. And then, yes, I'm aware that lettuce is a vegetable. So when we're talking about these things, you know, when people aren't settled in that enough, it becomes very easy to be intimidated by that. When people are very intimidated by it, if you're saying something very healthy that somebody's not ready for yet, and they're in the space where they're going to attack it, even doing something very beneficial and healthy can be too threatening and people will tend to make it wrong. So there are times where you will be able to do healthier behaviors with certain people more than others, okay? And that's going to be true for you as well, because there's always the next level, and sometimes that can be intimidating. And that can be intimidating, you know, when you find out somebody's making $1 million more than you a year, especially if you don't have your first million yet. you know, so especially if you're making a minimum wage, that's kind of scary. But, you know, to go and say, hey, you know, it was a bunch of millionaires. I stock shelves like the best of them. You know, and that can be a little intimidating. So when we are looking at, you know, what our values and, you know, what's going to work, the people that are actually doing those things are going to be the ones who, the healthy serving behaviors are going to be the ones that are going to be able to be more likely to accept it, or else they're doing enough other things that if you're doing something different, but still healthy, they can adjust to it and they're fine, because it's not like a big adjustment. They're like, oh, okay, you know, you like sliced almonds instead of pistachios. Okay, cool. And it's not that they won't have a different opinion or you do, but you can still keep friendships and people will still want to be your friends, even if you choose to have a different nut on your salad than they do, or no nuts because you're allergic. Yep, people can deal with that. But in codependency, sometimes people can't. And again, side effects of trauma, side effects of, you know, thinking processes, coping mechanisms, the whole nine yards. So it's important to understand that, you know, when we're doing healthy behaviors, you need to be able to do those healthy behaviors in an environment that's going to be able to deal with them. And you also need to be comfortable with that environment that does the healthy labors to the degree you want. So if walking into a super healthy food store, like a Whole Foods, you know, is completely and absolutely making somebody, you know, shake at the knees because, oh, the healthy people, you know, then that's one way to start getting used to, you know, being in a healthier environment. Is just shopping at a store, getting some certain specialty products at, you know, a Whole Foods, because there's something Whole Foods carry that other places don't. And it's, you know, good to go do that and try to be learn how to be comfortable in the environment. So there are ways that we can, you know, build those aspects up so that you're more comfortable being in environments that are going to be more serving. And then those people are going to be also more likely to be able to accept it. Now, again, does that mean everybody's going to agree with you all the time? No, just like you're not going to agree with everybody else all the time. The difference, however, in interdependency versus codependency is that in interdependency, people have the capability to be able to deal with differences. Okay. And that's important. Now, when do differences, you know, sort of like not work? Well, everybody's got a little bit of codependency, but it also depends on if, like, your difference of opinion comes across as criticism. So, for example, somebody makes a really lovely salad and they put pistachios in it and you don't think pistachios go in that kind of salad, but it turns out it's really good. If you're sitting there going, well, I think this would be better with almonds, that comes across as very critical because it is, you know, it's not just like enjoying the salad for what it is. So there are different times where we do we do voice that we have a different opinion on something, but there's certain places that it's going to work better than others. You know, somebody says, hey, you know, the almonds are stale. Do you want some? No, I don't like almonds. that's a great place to express it because you don't want to be forced into buying something that you don't want and will not use. Places where it's not going to be as, you know, beneficial to be expressed, okay, somebody put pistachios on the salad, you wouldn't do it that way to eat it, and, oh, it's delicious. Okay. Oh, this is really good. I really like it with the pistachios. I usually make this with almonds. This is a really nice change. Now, as you advance beyond that, you start to leave out that I would make it with almonds because that can still kind of taint things a little bit, a little tiny bit, again, depending on who you're dealing with and what their sensitivities are. But you just say, like, oh, this is really delicious. I really like the pistachios in it, you know, and, you know, this is really good. This is the first time I've had pistachios in it like this, you know, and that can be really good. So, and again, some people may find that a little bit off, but it's going to be a lot better than, like, you know, codependency version of it. How dare you make, how dare you put pistachios in this salad? You know, ooh, aren't you fancy, right? Because that's the attack at codependency, and that's why codependency tends to be so hard. So when we start to make, you know, these distinctions between, you know, what's going to be serving, where we need to adjust, because in codependency, you know, anytime, you know, somebody does something and it goes wrong, it's like, oh, other people can't deal with it. Is that true? Sometimes, just not all the time. And sometimes it's that we need to adjust what we're doing to do something more serving, and either the other person will get on board, even in codependency, they'll either be quiet and calm down, or they'll be so disgusted with you, they'll walk away. Now, codependency, people punish you when you don't agree with them. And there are certain issues that people have, for example, being very, very punitive, that they are going to need to see a therapist about. And unfortunately, sometimes people, when they do, in some cases, when they have a very punishing thought processing, they may not get help because they think that you deserve it. So when we're looking at all this, like and love and ignore everything, there are some things that do need to be addressed by a therapist that some people will not go for because they don't actually see anything is wrong. And, you know, sort of like glazing over to be like, airy, fairy in our heads really doesn't benefit anybody, but it actually creates a lot of non-reality. And then life tends to be a lot harder because if you like pistachios, you know, and you don't know if somebody likes pistachios or not, it doesn't make sense that you're going to sit there and have to text everybody, okay, I'm going to use this ingredient. Are you okay with this? Okay, are you okay with this ingredient? I'm going to use this. Now, some people in codependency really want that because in codependency, when things are like being overdone to the degree of, you know, everything stops unless you're making sure everything is okay. In codependency, one of the reasons why people can often blow situations is because they want to be considered for every single little thing beyond what would a normal capacity to, because they feel very broken, aren't taking responsibility for their lives, don't understand how to participate in things. And then they try to make it, you know, wrong, and you should ask, and even when they don't have the solutions, you should find another one. And it can, again, can spiral down into bash, because you're not doing everything exactly right, even though they don't know what they want anyways, and there may not be a way to provide a solution for somebody who's in that spiral in a reasonable amount of time without spending, you know, 10 hours worth of emails just to provide one dinner. You know, interdependency, oh, you don't like pistachios, okay, just, you know, take your fork and flick them to the side of the plate. No big deal. So it's important to understand, like, yes, there are places where people really are not going to currently be able to function to a certain degree, but it doesn't mean that they're all, that people who are in that position are always wrong. And it's far from meaning that they somehow are completely and absolutely devoid of having a good point for all of time. That would be ridiculous. It doesn't happen. So, but it can be very hard to get out of and to get your bearing out of it, especially when there's too much codependency, because codependency is notoriously hard to get your footing in. Interdependency is a lot easier to get your footing in, and that's what helps you to be able to climb out of it. But then, you know, part of that is, okay, I'm allowed to eat pistachios. Great, so I eat pistachios, but then knowing where is the appropriate place to do that. If I have somebody who's anaphylactic in reaction to pistachios, I don't eat pistachios around them because the fumes alone can send them to the hospital. And that's an important distinction. Codependency, I should be able to do whatever I want. Everybody should, else should always suck it up. In interdependency, you don't have a right to go over to somebody's house and eat something that's going to send them to the hospital. Like, that's really dangerous. And if somebody killed somebody over that by bringing, you know, pistachios into somebody's house where they've asked you not to because they have a very severe allergic reaction, that may be in some cases up for, you know, calling the police and having charges laid in some areas. That may be. So you need to be, because there are certain places where, you know, being very careless do involve the police for charges. So it's not just, you know, in codependency, it's just like, well, people should suck it up. Even if somebody's daughter goes to the hospital, it goes a lot deeper than that. So, and sometimes, like, again, the subtleties in codependency, that's not really a subtlety. In interdependency, it doesn't really make sense that somebody's going to, you know, be threatening your kids' lives because they don't want to bring a different kind of nut or not bring nuts to your house at all. So interdependency, very easy, or, well, I'm not going to say always very easy, but way easier than living in a lot of codependency. And it's important to understand that, but it's also important to understand that, you know, when you're saying no to certain things, when there's codependent versions of self-development, you should feel bad for that. You should feel bad for not letting Red come over to your house and, you know, threatening your kids' lives. And has that happened? Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, I know sometimes people are like, oh my gosh, it's just over-exaggerating. People don't actually do that. No, actually, it's true. Some people, for example, I remember when my kids were in, you know, still in elementary school, there were notices sent out, please don't bring peanut butter sandwiches. We have a peanut allergy. No nut butters are allowed to be brought to school. And some people still did it. So, you know, some people ignore those things because otherwise they're going to have to, you know, choose a different sandwich. And there are some people who will deliberately do it because they think it's funny to watch you squirm. And again, that would be more of a therapeutic version, but absolutely those things, you know, happen. So when you're looking at that and you actually understand that, then it stops making sense to hold yourself back from something healthy. If somebody, you know, and look at what you're going to hold yourself back over. Are you going to hold yourself back because somebody honestly doesn't get it and it's causing a big problem because they don't want to get it and they have a vested interest in not getting it and it's going to cause you a problem? Or are you going to hold yourself back because, you know, you're not going to do something because they're deliberately holding you back just because they think it's funny to screw you over? Are you going to hold yourself back because they're never going to get there this lifetime and they don't want to get there? Okay. And those are all things that do happen when there's, you know, when we start talking about, like, you know, needing to see a therapist to deal with behavioral issues. Those are things that a therapist or a psychiatrist will deal with in the course of who they're treating and what symptoms people are coming in for. So that's really important to understand about that. So, you know, you do have a right to say no. And in some cases, it doesn't actually even matter to the person. They don't really care if you come or go. They don't care what the effect is that it has on you. Again, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, everybody's got love in their hearts. No, again, that is an actual symptom or actual side effect or an actual behavior that some psychiatrists actually deal with during their daily practice in terms of people who are coming through their doors. It's a very real thing. How much people are able to get out of that without treatment, I don't know. So some things can calm down through self-development, but there are places where people are just stuck and they're just not currently able to make the changes unless they have the trauma discharged out of their system. So it's very important to understand that. So when we're looking at moving forward, when we're looking at moving ahead, there is a bit of an art to do it, and it is also making sure that we're doing it from an interdependent place, which is still being responsible as opposed to a codependent place, which is where, you know, people have a hard time with it and they say no to things because it doesn't make sense to, you know, somebody you barely know has decided you can help them move. Well, actually, I'm working that day. Well, you can just cancel. No. You know, especially if you're charging like a lot more money, you know, per hour, if you're making $100 an hour, that's $800 that you're going without to help somebody else move and you barely know them. Well, they could just do, well, you should just help them. Or they could hire a mover. You know, not everybody has that. Great. So, you know, sometimes, you know, if people are really, really stuck and they've got really low capacity, you know, sometimes you do come in after work, but sometimes you're not going to be able to because you have other responsibilities. So it's usually better in that situation to help somebody understand how to meet their own needs. In codependency, you know, regardless of how much you know somebody, regardless of the problems it's going to cause you, regardless of how much it's going to cost you, I mean, for if you're losing out $800, for example, of business in one day for helping somebody, it would be way cheaper for you to just take $400 and tell them to put it towards a mover. And if you don't want to do that for a complete and total stranger, then it makes very little sense to give up $800 and not work the entire day because you're helping somebody else move, right? Interdependency understands that. Codependency, you know, that's bad and wrong. And again, it's one of the reasons why people cause themselves a lot of problems and hardship in codependency is because they don't get that or don't want to. So understanding that in interdependency is what people to, well, quite frankly, in some cases, be a lot easier to get along with because, you know, people are generally speaking more likely to want to be friends with somebody if there's more of a reasonable boundary, like, oh, I'm moving. Oh, great. Yeah, and they're very nervous about it. You know, maybe the movers cancel at the last minute and they're like, you know, I know we hardly know each other, but would you be able to come over and help for a few hours after work, you know, on Wednesday or whatever? You know, sometimes a lot of people are really good about being giving. And sometimes it's like, okay, you know, sure, I'll be able to do this for you. Or if they have kids, when I was young, one of my friends moved and, you know, we were young adults and she had a small child. And it's like, well, you know what, I'll babysit him. He can come see Auntie and, you know, and that'll help her out with the move. So there's different ways that we can do that. With codependency, it tends to be a lot harder to help people because they tend to ask things that become really wildly out of proportion, such as, you know, hey, we barely know each other. It should cost you $800 to help me move, right? So in interdependency, because everybody does have needs and there's always a next level, but even somebody who understands that they're self-responsible will still, they're responsible for their own life, will still be easier to help, even if they have to ask a big favor, they'll still be easier to help. Whereas in codependency, when people are in the most need, it becomes a lot more dangerous to help or a lot more troublesome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes people feel like, well, you know, I have to be perfect in order to get help. No, perfect is very different than, you know, just needing to be reasonable. But the more that people are into codependency, especially in the area of understanding that they're responsible for their lives, they tend to be easier to help because then when you have something available that you could give them, that would help them, that they would enjoy, then you can do that and it's safe to do it. In codependency, when people don't understand that, that's when you start getting, you know, bullied or they're standing outside with a neighbor and the neighbor's glaring down at you because you wouldn't, you know, give up working for a day, give up your $800 to help them move, you know, even though, you know, you might have been willing to help them after work for a few hours, but now you definitely wouldn't because it wouldn't make sense for you to go into a bullying situation. So interdependency, easier to help. And that's why, you know, we move forward is not just so it's easier to help us, obviously, but also because then we learn how to steer our own ships and life goes better for the individual who is in more interdependency and solutions start to come and plus they become easier to help. So it's easier to be in community with people who are more interdependent as one example. So there's a lot of really good benefits for building skill set and moving ahead. And it usually has the most benefit for the person who's, you know, decided to make those changes. So we have, let's see, we have Brianne in Washington State, and she'd like advice on a relationship. Is it time to move on? Okay, so one moment here, Brianne in Washington. Oh, Brianne. Sorry, not Brianne. I put an R in there. B-Y-A-N-N, Brianne. So excuse me if I am mispronouncing that. If you write in again, please tell me how to pronounce your name. I'd really appreciate that. So Brianne in Washington State. One moment here. So Brianne, here's what it looks like. bottom line, your partner is not going to grow to the same degree that you have the potential to. So, and what I see is you can actually get very far ahead, but then you're still turned around saying like, okay, come on, keep up, keep up, keep up. And it's like, you know, here's the midway line. Your partner's still stuck, you know, between mid and starting point, even after you've gotten, you know, you're just short of the finish line and your partner still isn't really doing much moving. So, you know, I mean, obviously there is some attachment there because you're looking back and saying, like, where are you? Why aren't you doing this? You know, which is, you know, great that you're taking care and great that you're actually considering, you know, your partner in this, but you do have somebody who's not going to be able to do those things or may not get there one moment here. Here's the thing, like, because we have the situation of we have two people who, you know, just like most people, have stuff to work out, but two people who have stuff to work out a little more. And when you have two people who have got a little more or a lot more to work out, what will happen is it becomes very hard to stay with the other person because you start, as you grow, you start to understand how much when somebody doesn't grow with you, how much those, that lack of growth can really affect either your own growth or it can impact your results, you know, depending on what you're doing, especially if they don't want to cooperate with anything or if you're taking on the next levels of things. And now, you know, instead of having somebody who's cooperating and helping you build, it's just like you're either trying to talk to them and trying to get them along or you're having to do everything anyways. Because they're not doing things at the next levels with you. So you're still having to do all those things. And then on top of that, you're still having to take care of the relationship. You know, and as you start to grow and you start to understand, wait, if I do this, this is how much results I'm going to get. If I don't do this, it's going to make things five times harder if I don't do them. We start to see those things even in our own behavioral patterns of growth. And when it's a partner who's not moving, then we really start to see the impact of when a partner's not moving and growing. So when I'm checking into, like, okay, let's try this one. Nope, doesn't want to go. Okay, let's try this. Nope, doesn't want to go. So, you know, even during the read, I can't get a reading that says, like, this modality would really work to work on these problems, or this modality would work. I just keep getting, like, nope, not going to go. So one moment here. And in fact, sometimes, like, even a bad mood can come from, like, you know, hey, you know, maybe we should try this so you could get the help. Let's see here. So here's the thing. I'm not going to say it's always completely impossible, because actually I just got shown when you say, like, hey, you know, like, let's try this because I think it could really get you the help you need, all of a sudden your partner jumped up. And that was great because that was not something I saw before. So that is absolutely wonderful. So let's see, where's this? Hold on. Just checking where the finish line is. There. So here's the thing. When I do see that your partner is willing to jump on board, and that does look like it's more, you know, suggesting to go for couples counseling, for somatic therapy, with a somatic therapist, and that becomes very important when I see some of the flavors that I'm seeing. I usually suggest somatic therapy for that, because in terms of the effects that I'm seeing, the way that it shows up. And what I see is that to get you to your higher levels after that, it's like once your partner gets more over, like, the midway line, the halfway line, and your partner's over, you don't make the same strides. And it's sort of like that kind of locks you in position. If your partner is not making the strides, then I see you getting closer to the finish line. Not that, like, you're going to be finished for this lifetime. You know, and they can sit on your tushy and relax. But what I mean by finish line is in terms of, like, you know, how far can we get you to what are going to be, you know, a more acceptable space that you're going to be able to thrive more in. It seems like you would be able to do that better on your own than with your partner, even if your partner does cooperate. In fact, when your partner's not cooperating, it just seems like, you know, you'll kind of go and do it. And it's like when your partner is cooperating, it's interesting that that seems to be something that's more holding you back, and then you're not making the next levels. So in terms of, you know, is it time to move on? That's really something that you have to make a decision for yourself on. What I would really suggest for you is to talk to somebody who does deal with trauma therapy, again, because you're both exhibiting signs of that. And it can be a lot harder to make certain decisions when trauma is being held in the body. And this can be through, I usually suggest both, but neural manipulations, visceral manipulations. When people need those things, you can have people who have a harder time with seeing the bright side of things, you know. So some people, you know, it's like, hey, you know, cheer up. And sometimes some people can't. Now, some people say, like, that's depression. I've seen people get improvements with that through having this role in neural manipulations done without having seen a somatic therapist. Now, I'm not going to say that's always the case. I really want to be clear about that. it was somebody who was also very, very into self-development. So, and there may be also other factors that need to, come into play, including nutrition. You know, having the behaviors set, because that will make a big, huge difference. But I am seeing that you could do that, and it would make a big difference for you. Hold on here. And I do see that would be one of the things that would help you get across the finish line as somebody who does the neural manipulations, who does do, who understands and does deal with trauma. And that would be a really, really important point to get. And there are other things that you would be needing to work on. But just to be clear as a start, that would be something that would help you to bypass the finish line. And then in terms of, you know, whether you want to stay with your romantic partner or whether you want to move on, then I see somebody else, you know, kind of on the horizon. Hold on here. That I do see wedding bells with, which is really good. You know, and it seems like, you know, the more that you go ahead, it's almost like your partner ends up taking a detour. So, like, the same, you're not even going in the same direction. And then they, like, detour off. So it becomes a non-starter? I forget what that's called, but basically they don't end up going to the finish line with you anyways, just because they take a different detour. So, you know, it just depends on, like, what it is that you want to need. So in terms of, you know, if you don't do that stuff, hold on here, and your partner stays with you, I could see about another 10 years of being together, and then your probabilities after that go down considerably. So again, up to you about whether you want to do that or not, or, you know, whether you want to try to push that. But that's a decision that you're going to have to make for yourself. So good luck with that. Okay. So one moment here. So Michelle wants to know if there's an energetic reason for her recent weight gain. So one moment here, Michelle. Yeah, there's a lot of Michelles in the world. Next time, put your city, honey, please. It makes it a lot easier to track you down. Let's see here. No, not that I can see. Let's see here. So, Michelle, it seems more like it's that there's things that you need to accept about your role in your weight gain. And I know sometimes that can be really uncomfortable. So, you know, to deal with or to accept. So it becomes like, you know, is there an energetic reason, et cetera? And no. So what they're basically saying is that it's come time to learn to accept your role in your own weight gain and to be comfortable with the fact that your actions do get results that you may or may not want. And that being said, I mean, there's a lot more that people can do in terms of weight. I mean, weight gain can be, you know, thyroid, depending on your age. It can be hormones, again, depending on your age. There can be not having enough healthy gut bacteria in your body. Dr. Terry Walls, that's T-E-R-R-Y-W-A-H-L-S. She has a book where she got herself out. She does the Walls protocol, and she has gotten herself out of a wheelchair with MS onto a cane in about 2 months flat using her protocol. Now, the benefit of her protocol is that there's a lot of food to eat. I did her protocol to jumpstart my body, even though I don't have MS, but because it was recommended to check her out to really jumpstart your mitochondria, or however that works. That may not be entirely accurate, but basically to really, you know, get your body going on fire. And so I did her protocol. And I'll tell you, it's a really, really hard protocol to do because you have to eat so much freaking food, like 3 cups of leafy greens, 3 cups of your colors, like, you know, and full color, not like a banana where it's yellow on the outside and white on the inside, but like raspberries where there's color full through. And then 3 cups of sulfur. So that's cabbage, onions, and I mean like 6 cups of fruits and veggies a day. I was like, overload, so much freaking food. And it's 9 cups a day. And one of the complaints, so to speak, that Dr. Walls has about her program is, number one, there's so much food to eat. Number two is, you can lose too much weight on their program. Okay, and when you are eating copious amounts of fresh fruits and vegetables, again, not your, like, pre-bagged stuff, you know, it could be better than nothing, but you really want the stuff that you're putting together yourself, not just pulling out of a bag. When you're, like, I'm going to call it force-feeding because I was definitely having to force-feed myself. It really helps to build up your good, healthy gut bacteria. And your good gut bacteria, number one, they've done studies on identical twins where one twin had a strong diversity of beneficial bacteria in the gut, and the twin who had that was a lot thinner than the twin who wasn't. The twin that didn't have that weighed more. So there's a lot of really great benefits to doing it. You can check that out. Also helps with a lot of health issues that people may not realize, and you know, it's mostly dealing with food. So, you know, it's a pretty good way to go. So thank you, everybody, so much for being here and for writing in. My name is L. Maya Hoshiamtara. You can find me here at newsforthesoul.com. You can also find me at www.enlightenmentinthecity and come in for your coaching. The coaching's the good stuff. That's what you really want to do. Well, this is the good stuff, too. But the coaching is more personalized for you so you can get to who you are, learn what beneficial actions that you can take that are really going to serve you and help you to get to where you actually want to go in life, which is really, really beneficial. So thank you so much, everybody, for calling in and writing in. I guess not calling in today, but for writing in. And I will talk to you in 1 week, 3 p.m. PST, New York and Chicago. That's you, your rush hour here on newsforthesoul.com. Thank you so much, everybody. I love you. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.